Welcome to Subscriptions for Authors. Meet your co-hosts, Michael Evans, sci-fi thriller author of a dozen novels, and Amelia Rose, a semi-romance author that makes six figures per year in subscriptions. Together, we will help you make more money with subscriptions and succeed in the future of publishing.
There's a shift happening in publishing from the algorithm age to the artisan age. An age in which we maximized engagement, maximized our productivity, and in the process, burned everyone, readers and authors included, out. And into an age where depth of experience and depth of meaning triumphs. That's the shift that we're talking about today with none other than Kevin Tomlinson, an amazing thriller, sci-fi, and fantasy author who's also been a legend in the space. He's been publishing for well over 15 years. He ran the Wordslinger podcast and now runs it again. The Wordslinger podcast is back. It's one of the first podcasts I was ever a guest on. I literally was a listener 7 years ago. It's really cool that he's back, and not only back in the podcasting saddle, but back full time in the writing saddle after spending time at D2D and helping serve authors in the industry. And he's really seen from the inside how shifts in technology, shifts in behavior, and just shifts overall in how this industry works are leading to the rise of the artisan age. And we're going to talk today about how you can approach and build your author brand in this new age of publishing in a way that is sustainable, and ultimately in a way that's going to help make your readers happier. So that's what today's podcast is about. And honestly, why I'm so passionate about this is because my mission in starting Ream and our whole mission for the team is quite similar. We wanted to create a future where we put readers first and storytellers rule the world. And with that, we really, really wanted to give authors other ways to make an income outside of having to maximize engagement and maximize productivity. We wanted to put you in control and allow you to create deep, immersive worlds for your readers. That's what Ream's about. And if you haven't joined it, you can do so for free in the link in the description. It's an amazing platform for writers and readers. And we're actually in the process of developing our rebrand as we enter the next chapter of Ream, because Ream is almost 1 year old. Now, I hope you enjoy this podcast with Kevin. As always, like, subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. We'd really appreciate it. We passed 1,000 subscribers a while ago, but our next goal is 2,500. That would be really awesome. And as well, we would really, really appreciate it if you shared this podcast with a friend. I know I'd appreciate it. I know Kevin would appreciate it. And it makes me happy because although I know we're talking about maximizing engagement and all that, I get sad when the podcast doesn't get a lot of views. And I don't know, do you want me sad? I don't think so. So if you want me to be happy, then you can share this podcast to your friends. All right, enough of the cheesy stuff. Let's dive in to this conversation. Kevin, it is an honor to be chatting with you today because we go back a very long time, and also a short time, meaning it was just a week ago that we were flipped positions.
Yeah.
I was being interviewed on your podcast, which is back, which is exciting.
Yes, it is back after what I'm calling a 4 year minute. It's back. Yeah.
And let everyone know up front, podcast name, where they can go listen to it. The link will be down below, everyone. But
yeah, I've pointed wordslingerpodcast.com to it. It's the show's now being hosted on Substack, which is a whole new thing for me. I'm still figuring out like the ins and outs of hosting a show there. It's working out pretty good so far. So if you go to wordslingerpodcast.com, it goes currently directly to where it's being hosted on Substack. I'm thinking of changing that in the future where it'll still get you to the podcast, but I want to beef things up and add more stuff. Yeah. So
late. Exactly. You're back in the saddle, back doing it, which is awesome. And the Wordslinger podcast has a special place in my heart because it was one of the first writing podcasts that I listened to now 7 years ago. And then actually that was the first podcast I think that I was ever a guest on.
Okay.
Yeah. It was like that one and then Writer on the Road, which Mel Hammond did. And yeah, so it's very cool to be like very almost 4 year minute, 7 year minute, flash the future. And things have changed a lot in our lives and in the industry since this last period. And you started using this word that I really called the artisan age. Yeah. And I want you to talk about, what do you mean by the artisan age, and what is happening? Why is the artisan happening now?
It's evolving. It all started when I was at 20 Books Vegas, the last 20 Books Vegas conference last year, 2023. I started talking to people about like shifts that are happening in the publishing world. And not exclusively self-publishing, although I think we're leading the charge, but like our particular brand of publishing, there are quite a few things changing and I think improving. And one of those is like with the advent of AI. So AI has scared a lot of people but also encouraged a lot of people. But just for the sake of this conversation, looking at AI as a tool for that authors, some people will say, are using to write and produce books, that in itself has changed the game. Because for the longest time in the self-publishing world and in indie publishing, rapid release was the rule, right? If you wanted to have a successful career, you wanted to churn out as many books as possible, as rapidly as you could, get those lined up and releasing. And there were entire businesses built around that model. Some were doing as many as a book a day, and some are now talking about using AI to up the game on that even more. And all those things sound crazy to us, or sounded crazy to us, would have sounded crazy to us just a few years ago, but now it's a reality. And so you have things like, when I left Drafted Digital, we were already trying to figure out how to deal with accounts that were uploading like 1,000+ books in a day. So that tells you a lot about where things stand there. So the artisan age idea, where that's at its root, was I had this realization that the rapid release model was now going to become less of a benefit for us, or less of a resource for us or tool for us, and more of a liability, because there are plenty of readers out there who don't want to read AI generated books. There's lots of who will. I'd argue the same group that is willing to read, if you were publishing a book a day through your sci-fi imprint and they're reading every one of them, that same crowd is probably going to read AI books. So you can't say that no one wants to read them, but there is a group that will say, I'm not touching it or whatever. And so what we've got is this scenario where rapid release is going to make it look like you're just generating books by AI, and that's going to work against you. So what I started thinking about, what I've been talking to like Joanna Penn and a whole bunch of others about this, is there's a real shift now towards, this is our opportunity to seed the ground of rapid release. And this is just one, facet of this whole thing, by the way, but allow that to go to AI. You can have it. It was exhausting. It was killing us anyway. But now we have this opportunity where we can slow down, take our time, and focus more on craft. And it's not that rapid release books couldn't have high quality craft centric books. You tended to try to cut as many corners as you could and make those books as readily available as quickly as you could. So now, like, there's people, and I'm one of them, who are dialing back, and I'm taking my time on some of these books, taking a lot longer to produce them than I would have before. And that's a little scary. Revenue is something we're going to have to figure out a little more as we go, but we've got some answers to that too. But the idea is the artisan age, I'm starting to see this as a trend, not just in publishing, but across the board in all creative endeavors and more. You're seeing a lot of people, there's a trend now towards like physical media. We're like looping back, people are right. There's an entire, I went to a Walmart for like the first time in years, a month or so ago. There was an entire section of vinyl LPs, albums, and record players for sale in the electronic section of Walmart. And you can call it a rule of thumb, but if that stuff is showing up in Walmart, that means it's popular. And things like that. People are buying CDs again. People are buying Blu-ray discs or DVDs again. They want to hold their media because a lot of times that stuff gets taken away. Netflix will lose the rights to stream something. And if you don't own a Blu-ray of it, then you may not see it again. So there's a lot of things like that. As I've watched, this is a long-winded answer too, Michael, and I'm sorry, but it's not a...
And that's what it's about.
It's the artisan age in its essence, really. It's the idea is we are looping back to more care, more quality. It's more about being able to interact with things. And we're seeing that impact everything, music, books, film. We're seeing a real shift in the cultural consciousness. And I'm really excited about it. I'm leaning in on it.
Yeah, let's talk about that leaning in, because you mentioned like a few things that I want to pull out. First is like the idea that, like the rapid release model was probably one of the most tried and true ways to make a living, specifically as an indie author over certainly the last, we'll call it honestly, greater part of a decade. It's been the model. And for good reason, because from a business perspective, it makes sense. The more product you produce, the more readers are going to read, and also the more money that you're going to make either through page reads or through ebook sales, because all that's tied to the quantity of reading. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about making this shift in your business. You even highlighted the new revenue streams. You have to make that work out. What does it actually look like? Because for an author who is listening to this, who maybe like you, I know you've written like dozens and dozens of books. I mean, you have you've done in a good way, like you've produced a lot of books.
Yeah.
You're at times where you're like, we're pushing yourself. So you're trying to now adopt this more of an artisan mindset. What does that look like? Not only from a mindset perspective,
but from a more practical, like how do I make a living? One of those is something, and you've probably heard it, like the buzzword right now is direct sales. And that's a mixed bag. But I think what's happened is there are writers out there who are experimenting with direct in a way that I think others aren't quite thinking about yet. And one example of that is I talked with an author a few days ago, and what he's doing is he's got special leather-bound special editions of his books that he sells direct. And every one of them is numbered and signed. And his overhead for those is, we're going to say $8. But he's selling them for $45. And so there's a huge margin on that. If you've taken the time to build a reader base and they're happy with you and they're following you as a brand, you've got those fans, right? The 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 true fans, whatever the number is now, but you've done the work, you've done your homework. That offering that specialty product is one way to shore up against the gap when you're taking your time to write the next book. Then offering ancillary product that's related to that as well. The king of this is Jo Pinge. Like, she's just the king. She's the queen. She's the queen of ancillary and related product to what she's doing. So she's got special edition paperback and print, leather bound hardcover and box sets. And she's doing a crazy amount of stuff. In addition to like her nonfiction side, like she's got the author facing business, but she's on the fiction side. She's doing so many things. That's where we're going to be. I think if we're thinking of ourselves as the brand, as the thing that we're promoting to readers, and that's what I think we should be doing, like more so than I have this sci-fi series or I have this character or whatever. Like, the thing that I want my readers to yearn for is another Kevin Tomlinson book. Yeah. So that I can choose to write anything I want. I can choose to write sci-fi, fantasy, thriller, whatever. And my readers are going to buy it because what they're reading is Kevin Tomlinson. I think that's the way forward. And once you've established that, it's a little bit like being Nike. Nike doesn't make just shoes. Nike makes apparel. They make workout clothes and they make hardware and stuff. They make all kinds of stuff. And because it's got that Nike logo on it, people who like Nike are going to buy it. Nike might be it's a decent example. You're seeing this happen all over. That's what we as authors need to be focused on, is like, how do we build brand loyalty? And my feeling on that, and I think uniquely you will agree, is that it's all about storytelling. It's all about craft as artisans, no matter what it is. I'm going to branch out. Let's talk about more than just writers. If you're an entrepreneur of any kind, if you've got a software company or you've got a carpentry business, the story that you offer your clientele is what's going to attract them, keep them, encourage them to build loyalty for you, toward you. And the better we are, and we happen to be storytellers by our nature, and the better we are at storytelling, the more successful we're going to be.
Yeah. No, I not only fully agree, I think that it's exciting. That's true.
It is exciting. Yeah.
It's absolutely it's a good thing. But I also know that, like you said, like Kevin Tomlinson book, and I'm going to ask a meta question because it's really funny because you're right in front of me. Who is, or maybe what is a Kevin Tomlinson book? And with that question, what would be your advice on how others can answer that for themselves?
Yeah. For assuming you don't mean how do they write a Kevin Tomlinson book?
Oh yeah. No, exactly. For me, like, that's the hard part, right? What is my brand?
Yeah. And so and people who follow me wherever I show up, especially like my podcast or whatever, like they're going to hear me talk about certain elements of my life that are both guidelines for me personally and part of the shape of my brand. And one of those is I have a mission statement, and that mission statement informs everything I do. I won't repeat it because it's not long, but you can go find it. It's easy to find. It's on my website. It's everywhere. But here's the deal. Everything I do has to fit. I have four silos that are part of that mission statement. It's inform, inspire, educate, and entertain. Mm-hmm. And if whatever I'm doing doesn't fit in one of those silos, and ideally two or more, then it gets scrapped as a project. Now, where that comes in on my fiction, my brand is I write hopeful, fast-paced fiction. That's what I decided was my brand. So hopeful in that it is inspiring in some way. It's exciting. It's hopefully exciting, fast-paced, right? It's hopefully going to grip them. I like good, fast-paced stories. And I've written some things that are a little more literary, but I still want that note of hope in what I do. That's not uncommon. That's not unique to me. What we've got there is the shape of whatever it is I'm going to produce. And I've got my four silos of my mission statement. And so I've got these pieces I've put together that tell me what my voice is and what my brand is, which makes it a lot easier to hint at that brand too. And that includes more than just readers now. It includes viewers and listeners to the podcast. And even when I do public speak, I do a lot of public speaking. I'm actually going to be at NINC, by the way, this year, talking about the Artisan Age. So I was invited as a featured speaker at NINC. And that whole idea, the whole Artisan Age idea, everything about this evolved first from that sort of brand concept of mine that I write. If I'm writing hopeful fiction, I also write hopeful nonfiction. I'm writing things that are meant to inform, inspire, educate, entertain. And so that's where you start. Every writer should endeavor to define for themselves what their mission and their purpose is. I have a purpose statement in addition to my mission statement that I stole entirely from Neil Gaiman. He did a talk to the College of Arts in 2012 that I highly recommend you find. You can find it on YouTube. Just type Neil Gaiman 2012 College of Arts. And his speech to that graduating class, he mentions that he always saw himself as moving towards, his whole writing career was about moving towards a mountain. And whatever he did, it had to move him towards that mountain. And he would do the thing that moved him closer to the mountain and give up the thing that moved him further away. So he turned down good paying jobs. He turned down opportunities. He skipped out on what might've seemed like great projects because they didn't get him any closer to his mountain. And that's a great metric to use on your own career. But he gave his mission statement. He didn't call it out this way, but he said that his whole shtick was he wanted to be a writer of good books and good stories. And there's some other things he said. And so I stole that whole thing, modified it to taste and made it my purpose. I recommend doing the same. Steal liberally from other people and modify it to create your brand.
Yeah. That's so great. Like that you're saying, almost starting with mission, purpose, values, which funnily enough, I think was a very big thing just in how we build brands going back. And when I say we, it was very tough for individual people to build brands up until the internet and until this new artisan age. But it became something that I think big corporations co-opted, and it got to be almost cheesy. Oh, a mission statement, oh, purpose, values. And then you saw this technology era rise where basically everything became super data driven. We don't really need any sort of real mission, purpose, or values. Like HR will tell us anyone, but that we don't even pretend anymore. We're just going to optimize. And now we get into this age, like you're saying, where it's, we either have these two ways to go. And if you're in this artisan age, you kind of circle back, almost going back decades into like how companies are built. And now you can build the company, which is thinking about these mission, purpose, and values. But you were talking about Joanna Penn and all the things that she's doing, which I love Joanna Penn. She's done so much great things for this industry and also is just an awesome author. And all the kind of like the economy that she's building around herself, her own little creator economy, artisan age. Yeah. I'm curious for you, as you get into your next stage, I know that you've made a shift in your career, not only from a mindset point, but like from a practical standpoint. What is that sort of maybe artisan world, or what do the special editions look like for you? What is that analogy for you?
In terms of?
What are you doing? Are you, is there going to be a Tumlinson special edition novel? Are there?
Yeah, I am thinking about doing special editions for sure. The first step for me so far has been, first of all, I'm going to be launching, I guess I'm announcing this here. I haven't really made this public knowledge anywhere. I'm going to be launching an all new imprint for myself, because for the past decade or more, really almost two decades, my publishing imprint was called Happy Pants Books. And that kind of came out of an inside joke, but I've created something new called Novelton, spelled with a K-N-O-V-E-L-T-O-N. Novelton.com, by the way, is active. It just leads to my website right now, but
oh, cool.
I'm launching a new, promotion. I'm launching a new publishing imprint. And I do foresee that someday I'll be folding maybe other people's work into this. But for now, what I'm doing is building that around my books. So I'm redoing all my covers. And people know I typically end up redoing my covers anyway, like once a year. But I'm redoing all the covers, new art, new Colophon logo on the spine, special attention to certain other details. And I'm going to be building that up and applying it. For the first time, I'm actually applying it all to my entire catalog at once. And this is a lot of work. So everything is going to go up fresh as a part of a launch of this Novelton idea. And from that, I've got a whole series of things that will eventually go live. So that's going to make it possible to do special editions, different types of product and related product and ancillary stuff. And then I had a couple of thoughts. I'm going to try this out on the small side at first, but one of the things, if you looked at my high school yearbook, everyone wrote in it, good luck with your bookstore. And because in high school, I was already talking about wanting to open my own bookstore, which I have yet to do. But one of the things I thought I would try is I have this concept of Novelton Books, or the Novelton Bookshop, spelled with two P's and an E, shop. Okay. And what I'm thinking I'm going to do is start with like local, like farmers markets and stuff, start building all the brand assets and everything around that and getting people on mailing lists and getting people interested. And I eventually want to buy like a walkable trailer that I have a pop-up bookstore in so that I can take it to events and things, have it signage, a little coffee shop inside of it and everything. Nobody steal this idea. This is Kevin's idea. But what I'm thinking about doing at that point is, first, I'll start with my books, but I've also got all these author friends. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, how about some consignment? I will, you send me two or three of your books, no charge for me, and I will sell them on consignment in my little mobile pop-up shop, and I'll take a small cut and you get the rest. But the idea is less about sales, by the way, and more about building that sort of brand recognition so that people go to these events. And it started small at these little Texas farmers markets or something, but that logo gets out there. The concept of this being a very indie focused bookshop is out there, and word of mouth gets around, and I'm going to offer to sell eBooks in that thing. I can take a cut of that too. And that one's easier, but that's one idea, and I'm going to evolve from there. There's a lot. The Novelton concept is it's been something that's been growing in my brain for the past. It's had various names too, but now it's official. I have an official logo and everything. So.
Oh, that is so exciting. Novelton Bookshop too. I love this.
Yeah.
Two P's in the E.
If you pay close attention to the Wordslinger podcast show art in the top right corner, it says Novelton Media. So I'm secretly Easter egging this thing out into the world a bit at a time.
Yeah. That's what you have to do though, because there's so many places to update the brand assets that it takes a long time. So there's no way to do that where it just happens like overnight. But that is fascinating. Talking about this new age of like independent bookselling, obviously we talk a lot about Amazon, especially as indie authors. It's the dominant bookselling platform. And that is certainly true. But since 2009, the number of independent bookstores in the United States has basically doubled. And that's a really exciting thing. There are people who are really interested in supporting. Hey, this is my local store in my town. I want to go there. Yeah. And Barnes & Noble, obviously, they're not exactly an independent bookstore, but they actually have started growing again in the United States. And that's a fascinating thing as well.
They're actually leaning in on an independent model, though. They're shifting. They changed the store format. So you're seeing more of these pop up where they are smaller, almost like a B. Dalton or a Walden Books. I know that predates you, Michael, but for us old timers, you used to go to this thing called a mall and there would be this thing called a bookstore. And there were only like a couple. So they're using a similar model. They'll go into a strip mall or into a town center and put a very modest sized, small format bookstore in there that is specific to that region. So they're letting those managers design that store. So it's got a very indie book feel for a large mega core.
And that's all because their current CEO actually owned, at least ran an independent bookstore in London. And it's a very good one. So it's fascinating how things are evolving. And I love what you're doing with Novelton. I actually think that specifically like where you're located in the country, it's a perfect area to start the brand.
I think so too. It's one of the reasons we moved here. There's Austin, if you don't know where we're talking about, I live in the Austin, Texas area. It's this interesting like magnet for self-publishing.
Yeah.
For publishing in general, I actually was just having a brief conversation with Ryan Holiday, who lives in Bastrop, Texas, which is like an hour away from my house. There are celebrities that live in Austin, of course, Matthew McConaughey and Sandra Bullock and Joe Rogan and people like that. But there's this huge author presence here. Every couple of weeks, I end up having coffee with Johnny B. Truant. For those who remember the self-publishing podcast back in its heyday. He and Sean Platt both live in Austin. So it's a big publishing, and I think it's a big and growing publishing presence here. Beyond that, it's a very supportive market for the independent creator. And so I think you're right. I think my approach to this is local is a good way to start because it's a proof of concept thing. I can work the kinks out. It's a lot more forgiving, and I can just keep rolling profits back into this idea until it is self-sustaining, and then I can expand. This is the classic expansion model, which you would know much better than me, Harvard guy. I need to consult with you when I'm ready to do this.
Happy to chat, man. Yeah. that's super cool. And it has me going back to thinking about now, obviously your mindset around your business as an author has shifted and you're opening up these new opportunities, which is exciting. But how about the actual writing process?
Yeah. That's really what it's all about for me. Everything else can fall apart and go away, but the writing stays. That's been the through line of my entire life. As my wife says, it's the air I breathe to sit and write. They tell you that if you want to find your calling, find that thing that you would do, even if no one ever paid you for it. And I can absolutely promise you that's writing for me because I did that for many years and will do it again if it comes down to it. Hopefully it doesn't. But yeah, the writing, I write daily. I typically aim for a minimum of 2,000 words a day, although what I'm learning now is it's less about churning out as many words as I can manage and more about churning out the best possible words I can manage. And I am getting better about not pushing myself beyond a certain point. Because there were days, and you may know this story, I became somewhat, we'll say, locally famous in the indie publishing world. For first, it was I would write a book in 30 days. That became passe. Everyone does that now. So it was like 15 days. And then for a while, my record was 10. And then one day over a Thanksgiving break, I was with my wife and her family in Manhattan. And I spent a snowy, drizzly day in the hotel bar. And I wrote a book called Evergreen, all 60,000 words of that first draft in an 18-hour window. And wow. Never doing it again, but it does show what's possible. Now AI can run circles around me and have that book written in 10 minutes or 10 seconds, maybe.
It wouldn't be that book, but it would be a book.
Yeah, it would be a book. And yeah. So that's the writing is very important to me. It is the thing for me. I just, no matter what else I do accomplish, I loved Drafted Digital and I loved being the face of that company. And I love the authors that we represented and assisted. And if that was great, but it in terms of its relationship to my writing, like it was less than nothing to me compared to the writing. Everything I've done over the past couple of decades, every positive, great thing in my life is all started with the writing. Yeah. And so when you talk about the whole artisan age, like that's what I think we're evolving to is, and that's what I want to see. I want to see authors. I love my author community. I've served this community and I've paid the price, by the way. There are opportunities I've missed and things that I'd be further along in my own writing career had I not diverted and put a lot of focus on the writing community. But I love this bunch. We're all in this together. But what I want to see the author community evolve to is that idea that the writing is this, it's important. It's important because the people reading it are important. The people writing it are important. That's what the whole artisan age is. We're part of this spiritual movement. We're part of this. I'm reading Wayne Dyer's book, You'll See It When You Believe It. I've been talking about this on my show. He refers to us at one point, all of humanity, as being part of an organism that we'll call the human being. And I thought, that's really good. I like that. And that what it implies and what it necessitates is that each of us is a cell in this larger organism. And if you have a cell that's going off on its own and not doing what it needs, what it's programmed to do and not doing the task that serves the larger organism, we call that cell a diseased cell. And I think for a while, the writing community did shift its mindset and was, not, I don't want to go as far as to say it was diseased, but I think we were getting sick. I think we were getting worn out, tired, spent. And now I think, thanks to technology, but also thanks to kind of an awakening in our mindset as creators, now we are entering an age where we can dial back and rest. And through that, we actually produce so much more and such a greater quality, and we can impact we're that cell that will make the human being even better. That's what I think is happening. Not just with writers, with everything, even entrepreneurs.
You know, this is so interesting because I was reading an article from a writer, Rex Woodbury. He writes about technology and he was talking about mass production, right? And he equated the age that we're entering right now to the second stage of the Industrial Revolution, where the first stage of the Industrial Revolution was like, we have steamboats, steam trains, we'll move everything around. And then it became like, we can now produce almost unlimited, I'm using quotes, it's not actually unlimited, but nearly unlimited things, more things than we ever need. And we kind of view the internet, that first stage of the internet, very much, okay, we're getting the trains that can bring the information everywhere. And now we can produce information, produce content, almost machine-like. But then it's, if we actually look at, from even just an economic standpoint, never mind from a cultural relevance standpoint, what brands have had the most value? especially if we go to like just broadly producing things like fashion. Undoubtedly, it's like luxury fashion. And obviously, you can say what you want about luxury fashion, but even Lululemon's like consumer luxury, mm-hmm. where it's a little bit more affordable, but has that cachet to it. Always about endless consumption, because at some point you only need so many clothes, so many stories. Now, we still have a lot of clothes. We're still going to be reading a lot of stories, certainly.
Yeah.
But there is this shift in, oh, all of a sudden now, our relationship to this thing changes. And it's really cool to see your relationship to your writing change. So impressive that you're able to write like literally like a pretty beefy book in a day. But I'm also very happy to hear that one thing that stuck out to me was like, you're not pushing yourself anymore if you know that like the story is there. That's
huge. Are you familiar with the philosophy of Wu Wei? Have you heard about
No, way. It sounds like one of those Japanese words.
I'm a baby in this. I'm a tiny little infant in this, but I discovered it through Alan Watts, who was a philosopher big in the like hippie movement. Yeah. But Wu Wei in its essence, and I'm going to butcher this all to pieces, so the people who understand this better, you can correct me. But it is, in essence, it means action without effort. And the idea is, you still want to do the thing. I want to write the books. I want to make the podcast. I want to build the wall. But what I'm doing is getting into that state of flow, and so that the action no longer takes effort. And you get into that state by increasing like how aware you are every bit of it. But more importantly, increasing your awareness of why you're doing it and becoming clear on that. And making that reason, the reason why, has to be more than I like to eat, so I'm going to make money and eat, or I want to own a bigger house or whatever. It needs to be something that is true to, you know, who you are and that mission and purpose that you've established. Whether you've vocalized that or not, like you need to understand what you're about. I know what Kevin is about. And because I've lived with Kevin for 51 years now, and the guy can be a curmudgeon at times, but he's all right. He's doing much better than he was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, in terms of his attitude and the way he interacts with people. And now that I know what Kevin is about, this all sounds so woo-woo and spiritual now, but it's really practical. It's very practical, because here's my philosophy. And I talk about this in the episode in which I interview you, Michael, the one that's going to go live for me tomorrow, for us tomorrow. I don't know when your listeners will know about it, but
it'll be linked in the description. You should go.
There's a whole thing I talk about with the law of attraction and my concept of it. And it's very not woo. It's very practical. And the idea is everything starts with a thought. Everything does. And thoughts literally become things. Like when I write, my thoughts are literally becoming words on a page that can become a physical book that I can hold in my hand. And the same with podcasting, and the same with everything, right? If we know that the end result of that thought is going to be a physical thing, or is going to be a tangible thing in some way, then it does mean that our thoughts matter and the quality of our thought matters. And so what I've been doing for a while now is regathering, relooping to get clear on, like, this is the kind of thought I want. This is the quality of thought I want. This comes back to that artisan age concept, that it's the application of a high quality thought aimed at a real world tangible thing. That's what you're doing. And you know, when you think of it this way, like, you become much more dedicated to, it's not just about quality, it's about meaning. Is what I'm creating, does it have meaning beyond just, if I can sell a million copies of this, I can retire to my custom built catamaran or whatever. Like the meaning behind what we're doing matters, and it's starting to matter more and more to our audience, to our readers, our viewers, our listeners, to the customer who buys our products. We're starting to shy away from, look at what everything is happening in the, yeah, we're starting to turn our head away from the way things have always been done. The Hollywood studio system, we're getting tired of it. We're getting tired of the wrong message being dressed in the right look clothes, the right look. And we're getting tired of all that stuff. And I think what we've got in terms of readers, I know they're out looking for earnest, authentic, genuine content, not content. I don't want to even use that word. It's experience. They're looking for a genuine, authentic, real experience. And that's what we have to sell now. Authors, artists, podcasters, and entrepreneurs. What we have, what we're aiming to sell now is an experience for the right person. The right person matched to the right experience. That's what we're building.
That is.
Was that a lot of rambling? That felt like rambling.
No, that was profound. And I think really important that there's so many people that, especially I've seen this in many full-time authors, but full-time any sort of creative entrepreneurial endeavor where you get to that notion of full-time, whatever you thought the top of the mountain was.
Yeah.
You think I'm going to be happy and you're not, which is really sad. But truth is that.
And that's right. That's because the path matters.
Yeah.
Like it's not just about getting, so success is not a destination. It's a process. It's a trip. It's the journey. And that sounds cliche because it is cliche, but it's cliche because it's universally applicable.
Yeah.
So you get to that mountain, there's an advantage to the mountain always being off in the distance. There's a reason why it's Neil Gaiman said I always envisioned his career as a mountain. It was never about reaching the top of the mountain. It was always about getting to it.
The process.
It was always the journey. Yeah.
Yeah. And a journey as an artisan is probably for many of us a lot more enjoyable than a journey as an algorithm, which I think may be how the last age thing was defined.
That's what's happening now is that you've heard the people talk about the algorithm. There's the Amazon algorithm. There's the Google algorithm. There's the AI algorithm. And there's AO. And that's a term that a lot of times people will throw in just because it sounds like they know what they're talking about. But the truth is, like, we're currently living this algorithm existence. We have been. And it's like the whole AI mutation, evolution, it actually opened a lot of people's eyes to this, not necessarily in a negative way, but it was like a tipping point for the algorithm age. That's a great, I'm going to coin that. We were in the algorithm age, and then it reached its pinnacle. And now we're tipping into the artisan age, where experience trumps quantity, trumps production. Like, we still need those things. But it's a lot like the data age, which is what I was calling it before, like where data was the product and then it was like attention is the product. And now it's experience. Experience is the product. That's what we're building now.
It totally is. And it's something that, you're right, is happening everywhere. And I was just talking with a new friend of mine who's really into like Notion, and that's like a whole other conversation. But
I really want to be into Notion. I really want to. I need a tutor.
I'd be your tutor. He's the Notion evangelist. But what he's done with Notion is what's really interesting, because when I talked to him, he said, I'm on a mission to end, he used these two words, the maximize engagement paradigm. And that is what he viewed as our current kind of digital landscape and what this massive shift away from it is, from the maximize engagement. And I think that you're right that, you know, it's about the experience, because before it was just about maximizing engagement, which meant not only maximizing engagement from a reader standpoint, which is exhausting, but it also meant maximizing production from a creator standpoint, which is exhausting. So we're all tired and looking for something else, as the Gen Z trend is right now, is like grass. You'll see that on the internet a lot. That came from a Gen Z thing. Now it's worked its way up, and the millennial is always the first to co-opt it. And then I think, anyways, I love how language works, but regardless, people going like grass. And it's, because people are just like, where did we go? We've lost touch with it. Like, the grass is it, which is like weird. And it's a meme, but it says something about where we are at culturally. And
I guess you could call that qualified engagement. Like, you're, it's, rather than maximizing it, we want to qualify it. We want to increase, like, the, we've been going wide and now we want to go deep.
Yes. Dopamine cannot be the only thing we run on.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You will spin out if you're addicted to dopamine. There's only so far you're going to go, and then you will bottom out. That's what every industry that we interact with at this moment in our culture is a dopamine addiction. And that's what they're competing for, is like to give you their best high. And it's failing because we're all burnt out from it. Our receptors are numbed. We're not able to do it anymore.
It's also a limited resource. There's only so much dopamine and attention to go around, but there isn't a limited amount of, again, quality experience. This greater thing we're searching for in the arts and age, there's no limit. Maybe it's harder to quantify, but that's not really what it's about.
Absolutely right.
Kevin, this was amazing. Now just want to have everyone know, where can we find you? I know we already mentioned the podcast, but let's hear it again.
The podcast, you can find it at wordslingerpodcast.com. But if you want to find that and all other things, Kevin, kevintumlinson.com is my website. I'm a Gen Xer, so I still use a website.
Hey, they're super awesome. Yeah.
What's that now?
Websites are still in style. Don't worry.
They're still in style. Okay, good. And I'm also on Substack, which is, I don't know if that's the new hotness or not, but it really is a platform I like. And I'm on YouTube again. Hey. So I'm in all the places. So.
4K.
4K. Yep. Well, which is why it takes me forever to put out an episode.
Well, it's quality viewing though, which is, as we've talked about, maybe what it's all about. This was awesome, Kevin. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Kevin's awesome. And I was super excited to have him on talking about the artisan age, because it's such an interesting topic. And his mindset is one that the industry needs to hear more of now. So I'm excited that he's sharing with it. And I'm excited that us as a community get to experience it. If y'all want more from us, be sure to check out the link in the description to storytellersrulertheworld.com. There we have a bunch of awesome insights. We have a free book if you subscribe to our mailing list, and a lot of other things to help you grow your subscription as an author and grow your author career. We're going to be back with some more episodes soon, so stay tuned. But in the meantime, happy writing. And as always, don't forget, storytellers rule the world.